I am not Pastor Tom. You can come again next Sunday and you will hear God's word preached with authority and relevance. Today I'm standing in as one of the elders of this church. As an elder, I am hereby authorizing my wife to read the scriptures today. It is a long chapter, so peel your ears. It's chapter 9 of the Gospel of John. She's reading from the English Standard Version, and you can follow along from the Gideon Bible in the pew in front of you, and that's on page 758, or on the overhead, or on your digital devices.
I read from John chapter 9. As he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth, and his disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered, "It was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." Having said these things, he spat on the ground and made mud with the saliva. Then he anointed the man's eyes with the mud and said to him, "Go wash in the pool of Siloam," which means sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. The neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar were saying, "Is this not the man who used to sit and beg?" Some said, "It is he." Others said, "No, but he looks like him." He kept saying, "I am the man." So they said to him, "Then how were your eyes opened?" He answered, "The man called Jesus made mud and anointed my eyes and said to me, 'Go to Siloam and wash.' So I went and washed and received my sight." They said to him, "Where is he?" He said, "I do not know." They brought to the Pharisees the man who had formerly been blind. Now it was a Sabbath day when Jesus made the mud and opened his eyes. So the Pharisees asked him how he had received his sight. And he said to them, "He put mud on my eyes, and I washed, and I see." Some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath." But others said, "How can a man who is a sinner do such signs?" And there was a division among them. So they said again to the blind man, "What do you say about him, since he has opened your eyes?" He said, "He is a prophet." The Jews did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight until they called the parents of the man who had received his sight and asked them, "Is this your son, who you say was born blind? How then does he now see?" His parents answered, "We know that this is our son and that he was born blind. But how he now sees, we do not know, nor do we know who opened his eyes. Ask him, he's of age. He will speak for himself." His parents said to these things because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had already agreed that if anyone should confess Jesus to be Christ, he was to be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, his parents said, "He is of age, ask him." So for the second time, they called the man who had been blind and said to him, "Give glory to God. We know that this man is a sinner." He answered, "Whether he is a sinner, I do not know. One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see." They said to him, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" He answered them, "I have told you already, and you would not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples?" And they reviled him, saying, "You are his disciple, but we are disciples of Moses. We know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we do not know where he comes from." The man answered, "Why, this is an amazing thing. You do not know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and he does his will, God listens to him. Never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing." They answered him, "You were born in utter sin, and you would teach us?" And they cast him out. Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and having found him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" He answered, "And who is he, sir, that I may believe in him?" Jesus said to him, "You have seen him, and it is he who is speaking to you." He said, "Lord, I believe," and he worshipped him. Jesus said, "For judgment I came into this world, that those who do not see may see, and those who see may become blind." Some of the Pharisees near him heard these things and said to him, "Are we also blind?" Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would have no guilt. But now that you say, 'We see,' your guilt remains."
Let me pray. Father, your word is truth, and you said it will never pass away. May it speak to us this morning. Amen. This is my favorite chapter in the Bible, and I hope you'll see why by the end of the true story. And there is a handful of people here who may have heard me talk about this before, but that's what true stories are like. They get told over and over. And I'll use J.B. Phillips' transliteration as he tells the story. And my reasoning is that even though it may not be an accurate translation, it's the English I understand because English is my second language. The story starts out with later, as Jesus walked along. Later than what? Well, he had just come from the temple where he had claimed to be the I Am. The Hebrew scholars tell us that this is the name that God gave himself when he spoke to human beings, such as when he spoke to Moses from the burning bush. He called himself the I Am, and that's what Jehovah means. And Jesus, when he was in the temple, said, "I tell you the truth, before Abraham was born, I am." And because of that claim, he had narrowly escaped assassination. They were picking up stones for blasphemy. Some modern theologians and many ordinary Canadians say that Jesus never really claimed to be God. But here's one instance when he certainly did. And he's going to prove moments later. He saw a man who had been born blind from birth. Blind folks evoke our pity, and this patient is simply incurable by even the best of today's medical technologies. If you're born without vision, the vital connections between the retina at the back of the eye and the cortex at the back of the brain are not established. And the disconnect can be anywhere from the front of the eye to the back of the brain. And even if you cure this eye defect later in life, the person will not see, period. It is so very important to fix the eye problem near birth in those cases where the fault lies in the eyeball itself. And that was the case that I encountered one day when I had begun to do eye surgeries in our mission hospital in Cameroon in the 70s. That's the last century. Because you see, in that country of 7 million, there was only one ophthalmologist, and I got a few months of training at the Alex, and then I went back and started to treat the curable blind people after our first furlough. One day, the midwives came into my consulting room and brought a newborn with cataracts. Both pupils were pure white. The rest of the eyes were sound. Now, this may happen if the mother has syphilis, or if the mother, during the first trimester of pregnancy, has a viral infection of some sort. This is not too terribly uncommon. So I had to try and remove this obstruction, even though the baby was only a couple of days old, meaning remove the lens material from both eyes. This is, of course, not a baby. It's just to illustrate what we did there. Now, I was fairly satisfied with the result. It wasn't all that easy to work on a little newborn's eyes, especially with a veterinary type of anesthetic that we used, where the patient does not lie absolutely still, and the drug may also raise the pressure in the eyeball. Soon after the surgery, I went home to Canada. And 6 years later, I came back to the country as a volunteer. And wouldn't you know, one day a man brought his daughter saying she wanted to go to school now. I looked at her consultation card, and I recognized my handwriting, which is a miracle in my wife's eyes. Well, I can usually read it quite okay. It was the same girl I had operated 7 years earlier. Well, now she needed to see things a lot more clearly than had been sort of okay, but very blurry for the first 7 years of her life. So I scrounged around in my big cardboard box of donated used cataract glasses and actually found the only child's pair, which happened to have the appropriate thick lenses that makes you look like you have frog's eyes. The smile on the girl's face made me really happy. And they went away after paying the usual fee of maybe $3 or $4 for the consult and the glasses. I never saw them again. But it confirms the bottom line of my argument. This guy in John's story has an incurable problem. He was blind from birth, saw nothing. Now Jesus is probably surrounded by his 12 close followers and the usual crowd of hangers-on. Women who fed him, gave him drink, I guess. Some children, perhaps. Religious leaders, all somewhat restricted in their movement because this was a Sabbath day when Jewish people were not supposed to walk more than a kilometer, maybe 1,000 steps, all day. Anyway, the disciples had an interesting question for their teacher. Master, whose sin caused this guy's blindness? His own or his parents? Are they considering only these two possibilities for this poor man's misery? We are much more sophisticated, aren't we? We know a lot more today, and we have science and technology on our side. There's genome mapping and counseling leading to quality of life decisions, which life is worth living and which is not. There's personal autonomy and, of course, the almighty Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And soon now, we'll end up with more killing of the unborn and helping old folks to die when they feel they're no longer useful or just losing control or hope. But Jesus brings us down to the real issue. This man was not born blind because of his own sin or that of his parents, but to show the power of God at work in him. Now hold it a minute. This guy was deprived of sight for maybe 40 years just so Jesus could come along and use him as a teaching object to show us how good and powerful and merciful he is? Exactly. At least that's how I understand it. Because he goes on to say, we must carry on the work of him who sent me while the daylight lasts. Night is coming when no one can work. I wonder how close we are to this nightfall that Jesus is talking about. Remember the one sign of the end times I mentioned recently, Matthew 24:12. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. Jesus is referring to love among Christians, by the way. Back to the story. I am the world's light as long as I'm in it. Even more surprisingly, Jesus says to his followers in Matthew 5:14, you are the light of the world. You are the salt of the earth. And in John 14:12, something I don't understand yet, greater things than these are you going to do because I'm returning to the Father. Story time. Oliver was a 15-year-old, blind from birth. He lived in our boarding school for blind children, which Dr. Helen Marie Schmidt started after I left Cameroon in 1980, in the last century. His twin brother Richard, too, was born blind. No, that's not Richard. And his younger brother Samuel. And when I was back in Cameroon doing my six-month sabbatical in 1986, their six-year-old brother Emmanuel, that is Oliver. That is Oliver. That one is another boy, his name I've forgotten. He's playing the xylophone with four brothers, all born blind. Their two sisters were normal, the oldest and the youngest. So that means probably an X-linked gene in the chromosomes of the family. That's for you science majors. Oliver loved to sing, and he had a sweet voice, like most of the Oku tribal people. Sammy, that was his second brother, the third boy, he imitated his brother in his singing to the T, or actually the C, D, E, F, G, or whatever. I loved to go down to their compound on Sunday afternoon to sing with them with my auto harp, while they played the drums and the wood xylophone. We would story and laugh and sing. And the children would ask me a lot of questions while they sat on the merry-go-round, which I had made for them out of an old Toyota rear axle. Actually, they preferred the teeter-totter and the swings that I made them, because they said they were confused when they got off the merry-go-round. They didn't know where they were. One day, Oliver asked me if he could borrow my auto harp for Sunday service. I asked why. And he said, I'm getting baptized. And part of his testimony was going to be a song. On that Sunday, he actually said that he was glad to have been born blind, because he would have never been able to come to a school such as the Bonso School for Blind Children. And then he sang his own composition. I have seen the light of God. I have seen the light shine in my heart. I have seen the light of God shine in my heart. You may gather by now that there are more ways to see than just physical sight. The blind people often use the expression we use when someone explains something to us. We say, oh, I see. They do that too. I've largely lost contact with those lovable children, but I think Oliver followed several other students to the seminary after his high school education, aided by his ability to read Braille. He was preparing to help others see the light of the world. People born blind have a heightened sense of hearing, feeling, and smelling than we do. Those kids demonstrated that to me over and over. Quietly, I snuck down to their compound after I had been away in Canada for a year, and I just stood there saying nothing, and they sensed a stranger suddenly in their midst. Oliver touched my arm very gently and said, Doctor, you have come. Now I want to demonstrate just what this man experienced. Unfortunately, Mrs. Ham has stolen my thunder. Remember, he has never seen a thing. So please try to imagine you're blind. Just close your eyes now. Everybody, just for a short time, don't be embarrassed, just do it. Kids and adults, close your eyes. You notice your hearing is much better already? Don't open your eyes yet. You hear and then you feel a gritty, slimy, cool stuff on your left eye, and then on your right eyelid, and then the same voice of Yeshua says, go and wash in the pool of Siloam. Pool of Siloam. Can we have the pool of Siloam? It could be that this is the watering hole in Jerusalem, where people sent their children to get water for the household. That's the meaning of Siloam, sent, or one who's been sent. It was located in the southwest corner, just inside the Jerusalem city wall, and it was fed by the Gihon spring 500 meters away. Right there is the Gihon spring, and this is a tunnel that was dug 500 meters, and this is in the southwest corner of the old Jerusalem wall. A tunnel had been dug into the rocks by King Hezekiah 700 years earlier. Life-giving water in time when the enemies besieged the city, overflowing in abundance while Jerusalem was under siege from Sennacherib, the Assyrian. There's an interesting note on that name, Siloam, one who's been sent. Jesus was sent by the Father and obeyed. This man was sent by Jesus and he obeyed. We are sent. Do we obey? So the man went and washed and came home with his sight restored. Now, some folks call this a miracle, but I think it should really be called a sign. A sign is a directional indicator pointing to somewhere, something, someone. Jesus gave many signs, mostly to prove to unbelievers that he was the one he said he was. It's a little disappointing to me that we as his followers have such a craving for miracles. Most of our prayers are for God's supernatural, extraordinary intervention into our dilemmas, our sicknesses, our troubles. Don't you think we need to have a better idea of God's agenda rather than craving his miracles? To get on board with what he's doing in the world instead of asking him to keep us healthy and comfy? So what was Jesus' agenda in this story reported by John? Let's see. His neighbors and the people who had often seen him before as a beggar remarked, isn't this the man who used to sit and beg? Yeah, that's the one, said some. Others said, nah, but he looks very much like him. But he himself said, I'm the man, all right. Then how was your blindness cured, they asked. The man called Yeshua made some clay and smeared it on my eyes. And then he said, go to Siloam and wash. So off I went and washed, and that's how I got my sight. This man was a realist and quite at ease with himself. And he was able to put his neighbors and his bystanders at ease too, because he knew about Jesus. He did not yet know Jesus. After all, he had only heard his voice and obeyed. He was yet to see him. Where is he now? They asked. I don't know, he returned. Now, I'm not going to speculate why the folks wanted the Jewish authorities to know all about this extraordinary event. Human nature, I suppose. Customs, culture, Mosaic law that anyone healed had to present himself to the priest to verify the cure, maybe. That certainly was the case for things like leprosy and other skin diseases. So they brought the man who had once been blind before the Pharisees. It should be noted that Jesus made the clay and restored his sight on the Sabbath day. The Pharisees asked the question all over again as to how he'd become able to see. He put clay on my eyes, I washed it off, now I can see. That's all, he replied. Some of the Pharisees commented, this man can't be from God since he doesn't observe the Sabbath. But how can a sinner give such wonderful signs as these? Others demurred, and they were in two minds about him. Just try it sometimes. Just mention the name, and people will be in two minds about him. They'll argue, they have an opinion, maybe swear. Nobody's neutral when it comes to that name. Jesus. Finally, they asked the blind man again, and what do you say about him? You're the one whose sight was restored. I believe he's a prophet, he replied. Hey, that's what Muslims say, just a prophet. The great Magandhi thought he was a great teacher, but that was all. There are really only four possibilities when it comes to Jesus' claim to be God. There was a great man who wrote a little book, Know Why You Believe. His name was Paul E. Little. He was killed in a car pedestrian accident in Toronto in the 60s. Paul E. Little said, there are only four possibilities about this claim of Jesus, that he was first merely a legend, meaning just a story. But there are quite a few historians that have proven there was such a man actually walked the streets of Palestine. Number two, he was a liar. Well, you figure that one out. How long would he have a following if he was a liar? And would 11 of his 12 followers follow him into death if they knew he was lying? And third, he was a lunatic. He was crazy. Does a person like that have a following such as Jesus has? If he was crazy. And fourth, he is the truth. And if he really is what he claimed to be, don't you think you need to pay attention to him? Besides, there are plenty of witnesses around who've experienced Jesus personally. Just grab any friend of yours who loves Jesus and let him or her tell you how they met Jesus. The Jews didn't really believe that the man had been blind and become able to see until they had summoned his parents and asked them, is this your son who you say was born blind? How does it happen that he can now see? We know that he's our son, and we know he was born blind, returned his parents. But how he can see now, or who made him able to see, we have no idea. That's a blatant lie. Remember, he had just gone home after regaining his sight, and he told them all about it. Why don't you ask him? He's a grown-up man. He can speak for himself, his parents said, because they were afraid of the Jews had already agreed that anybody who admitted that Christ had done this thing should be excommunicated. It was this fear that made the parents say, ask him. He's a grown-up man. I see myself a lot in these older parents. I'm such a coward. I shirk responsibility in the face of brutal consequences. I like my retired state. My comfort in social security. I shirk responsibility. I like my circle of well-meaning friends. I wouldn't want to be kicked out of the church, out of the neighborhood, out of the profession. It's painful to be ostracized, or worse, persecuted, as there are so many of our brothers and sisters in today's world. At least 7,000 killed in 2015 alone. and hundreds of thousands jailed and tortured, slandered and robbed of all dignity. Do you pray for them as we've been told to do in Hebrews 13:3? So once again they summoned the man who had been born blind and said to him, "You should give God the glory for what has happened to you. We know that this man's a sinner." "Whether he's a sinner or not, I couldn't tell, but one thing I'm sure of," the man replied, "I used to be blind, now I can see." It's preaching time. This illiterate beggar man takes on the Sanhedrin, the top authority in Israel, who were his former benefactors, throwing him the odd coin whenever they entered the temple. "What did he do to you? How did he make you see?" they continued. "I've told you before," he replied. "Weren't you listening? Why do you want to hear it all over again? Are you wanting to be his disciples too?" This is an outrageous challenge. But the man knows what has happened to him, so the reaction is predictable. At this, they turned on him furiously. "You are the one who is his disciple. We are disciples of Moses. We know that God spoke to Moses, but as for this man, we don't even know where he came from." "Now here's the extraordinary thing," he replied. "You don't know where he came from, and yet he gave me the gift of sight? Everybody knows that God doesn't listen to sinners. It's the man who has proper respect for God and does what God wants him to do. He's the one God listens to. Why, since the world began, nobody's ever heard of a man who was born blind being given his sight. If this man didn't come from God, he couldn't do such a thing." That's very basic theology. Maybe not quite up to our standards, but laced with fervor and deep conviction. "You misbegotten wretch," they flung back at him. "Are you trying to teach us?" And they threw him out. Now here's an outright falsehood. They had just met his parents. He was not born in utter sin, or, as some translations put it, a bastard. Their fury leads them to spew language which is totally inappropriate to their high calling of representing God and his laws with a 1,300-year authority behind them. They, or more likely their temple guards, took him by the scruff of the neck and threw him out. I wonder if he stumbled and fell into the dirt. Now I come to the whole reason why I just love this story. Jesus heard that they had expelled him. And when he had found him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" "And who is he, sir?" the man replied. "Tell me so I can believe in him." Now remember, this is John's account. He hears people telling Jesus that the man's been thrown out, and John says that Jesus looked for him. Well, you and I should know that Jesus was fully man and fully God. He was totally aware. He had no need for anyone to tell him how to find this man. But listen to this. Jesus looked for him. The King of Kings is looking for you. The maker of the cosmos and the human genome is seeking you. That's more than passing interest. That is love with a passion and a purpose. This does not contradict, of course, what Jeremiah writes in chapter 29, 13, where God says, "You will seek me and find me. If you will seek me with all your heart, I'll be found by you." But here it is actually Jesus looking for you. Have you ever been found by Jesus? He has this question for you and for this man. Do you believe in the Son of Man? The Lord consistently gave himself this title throughout the Gospels, which refers back to Daniel's prophecy, chapter 7, verse 13 and 14. Daniel sees things which have not yet happened. "In my vision at night, I looked, and there before me was one like a Son of Man, coming with the clouds of heaven. He approached the Ancient of Days and was led into his presence. He was given authority, glory, and sovereign power. All peoples, nations, and men of every language worshipped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will never pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed. That is the Son of Man." "And who is he, sir?" the man replied. Tell me so that I can believe in him." "You have seen him," replied Jesus. "It's the one who is talking to you now." "Lord, I do believe," he said. and worshiped him. I would have loved to see that form of worship, probably down on his knees, clutching Jesus' feet. But I don't really know, and it probably doesn't matter what posture your culture dictates to you, but please do worship him. He is who he says he is. Just do it. Not just on the Sabbath. Do it all the time. And then Jesus said, "My coming into this world is itself a judgment. Those who can't see have their eyes opened, and those who think they can see become blind." Some of the Pharisees near him overheard this and said, "So we're blind too, are we?" "If you were blind," returned Jesus, "nobody could blame you. But as you insist we can see, your guilt remains." Last story. During our six-month volunteer missionary service in 1986, we hosted a total of 36 visitors, mostly from Edmonton, including a University of Alberta professor who insisted to coming to do some gratis work for the poor people in Cameroon. He was a leading surgeon, head of department, who had been an altar boy in some church back in Ontario, and he wanted to give back, as the saying goes, among some of the very successful people here in Canada. They want to give back. When I led the weekly Bible study for our senior hospital staff one week, while this professor was doing his expert surgery, I chose Colossians 1, 15 to 23, which I'll read now. "Now Christ is the visible expression of the invisible God. He existed before creation began, for it was through him that everything was made, whether spiritual or material, seen or unseen. Through him and for him also we are created, power and dominion, ownership and authority. In fact, every single thing was created through and for him. He is both the first principle and the upholding principle of the whole scheme of creation. And now he is the head of the body, which is the church. Life from nothing began through him, and life from the dead began through him, and he is therefore justly called the Lord of all. It was in him that the full nature of God chose to live, and through him God planned to reconcile in his own person everything on earth and everything in heaven by virtue of the sacrifice of the cross." That was simply too much for my friend. He could not agree to it or believe it. Yet, children can, and so can you. Do you believe in the Son of Man? Or are you still blind and your guilt remains?